This episode of the UAV Digest is sponsored by GoEngineer, provider of design, engineering, and 3D printing solutions for the aerospace and unmanned vehicles industries. To learn more, visit the UAVDigest.com/GoEngineer. You're listening to episode 213 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And I'm David Vanderhoof in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Hey, Max, how are we?
Good, David. Here we are. Another week. Some good stories lined up and one more interview from the big drone show.
Yeah, I think we're probably drawing this out a little long, but they were quality interviews. So I think I'd like to give, we'll probably finish them up next week. But tonight will be that infamous company that we love so much to talk about, DJI, but more about that later. Let's talk about drone delivery at your fingertips, a landmark ruling by the FAA, spinning drones and breaking Boeing news, a listener request, and so I guess we should get started. What do you think?
All right, let's get started.
Our first story comes from, I wonder how many times we've actually had this title as an article, Max. The future of drone delivery. Cambridge Consultants has drone delivery concept that delivers packages into your hands.
Hmm. When you think of drone deliveries, you think of them coming to a specific address. But this is a little different concept. This one delivers the package to you personally, wherever you are. It's called Deliver, D-E-L-I-V-A-I-R, from Cambridge Consultants. And it uses, well, it's a two-stage routing process that they apparently have a patent for. It's kind of an interesting concept, David.
Yeah, when the drone, the drone navigates by your to your smartphone using GPS, which is pretty commonplace. We've heard that a lot. And then when the drone arrives within visual range, it switches to precision optical tracking and 3D image and ranging system. The recipient is located and authenticated. Interesting, we're probably talking about things like retina scans. So you'll have to give the retina scan to the company doing the delivery.
No. It works differently, but it is a different kind of approach. What happens is when the drone gets close to you and you can see it, you point your mobile phone at the drone and it uses the LED, the light, the flashlight or the flash for photos, to blink a coded pattern that the drone detects. It uses that to locate you specifically and also, again, to authenticate the recipient. You're the person that the delivery is intended for. And then it moves, the drone moves right directly overhead, your flashing LED, and it drops the package down right into your hands. Couldn't be better.
You hope. The drone hanging over your head, dropping the package into your hands. Hopefully it's not dumbbells or anything like that. It's an interesting technology. I know that one of the challenges for drone delivery, and we've talked about this multiple times, is how do you get the package to the ground safely and how do you get the drone away safely without injuring the package recipient? And this seems to be a pretty thought out, logical way.
Yeah, what it does is it lowers the package on a cable, a 30-meter cable, and a stabilizing winch. That's the way that it places the package into your hand. On the website, they give some examples of some use cases, and I think maybe we can consider a few. Things like emergency delivery of an EpiPen, for example, or even something a little less dramatic, like those concert tickets that your friend picked up for you, and you know, you're at the venue and your friend is not and needs to get those tickets to you, something like that. There's probably lots of other more serious use cases than that, but it is an interesting concept.
That venue picking up the tickets for the rock concert at the ball game ain't going to happen in Philadelphia because it's within a mile and a half of the airport.
Yeah, okay, so we have restrictions like that. But anyway, it's a concept. Again, they have a patent on at least some portions of this. And we'll see what happens. Maybe it will go somewhere. Maybe it won't. It's hard to tell with these new ideas in this industry that's changing so rapidly.
Well, let's talk more about restrictions. This is an official notification from the FAA at FAA.gov. The FAA has banned drone flights below 400 feet over 10 Department of Interior sites.
Now, these are popular tourist destinations. The list includes the Statue of Liberty, the Boston National Historical Park, Independence National Historic Park. That's in your neck of the woods in Philadelphia, David.
It is. It's less than 10 miles away from me, which is within 5 miles of an airport. So someone should be flying 400 feet over that area anyway.
There's also a number of dams on this list. Glen Canyon Dam at Lake Powell, Grand Coulee Dam, the Hoover Dam, and Shasta Dam in California. And there's a few other sort of national monuments included in the list.
Well, one is the Jefferson National Expansion Memorial in St. Louis, Missouri, otherwise known as the St. Louis Arch. Mount Rushmore, and we know that you went to see that, so you didn't do any drone flying when you were around Mount Rushmore, did you, Max?
No, of course not. Although we did see a guy walk into the park area there with a drone held sort of behind his back. I don't know if he ever flew it, but if you are caught flying in these locations that the FAA has identified, they say that operators who do violate these airspace restrictions may be subject to enforcement action, including potential civil penalties and criminal charges. And these restrictions are already in effect. They went into effect October 5th, 2017.
And this is the first time an agency has placed airspace restrictions for unmanned aircraft or drones over Department of Interior landmarks. The FAA has placed similar airspace restrictions over military bases that currently remain in place. We're tightening the reins, and I don't blame the FAA for wanting these security areas to be protected by UAVs, especially when there's things like both Boston National Historic Park and Independence National Historic Park. We have large concerts there and large open events. You don't want a drone landing into a large crowd of people because trying to film the event or something like that. So, not surprising.
Sure. And this all comes about because of requests made by U.S. national security and law enforcement agencies. The FAA also notes that they're considering additional requests from other federal agencies for restrictions. They are enacting these restrictions under, they say, existing authority, Title 14, the Code of Federal Regulations, 14 CFR paragraph 99.7, special security instructions. So that's what they're using as the authority to do this. So they have a communication or awareness plan in mind, and everybody should consider themselves forewarned.
No-fly zones. Interesting, though. Well, I guess Washington, D.C. is already considered a no-fly zone, isn't it?
I think so.
So we'll see if this gets broadened out even further. The next one is from digitaltrends.com. Futuristic spinning drone may one day fight our battles for us. BAE Systems and Cranfield University students are designing a UAV that provides both fixed wing and rotary wing flight. I love blended UAVs. I think that's so cool.
And of course, it's something that we've seen before, but this concept is a bit different. Now, the body of this drone, which they're calling an adaptable UAV, the body has a big hole in the middle of it, a big circular hole. And the idea is that the drone, the UAV, can fit over a pole, and that can be used for launching one or multiple of these adaptable UAVs, also for landing. And the pole keeps the UAVs, they say, from being affected by high winds. It's a really different approach. There's a video that's available, and we'll put a link to that in the show notes, that really kind of shows this concept in action. And it is a concept at this point. The uses for this seem to be pretty solidly directed towards military applications, David.
Well, BAE Systems is a military organization, but adaptive flight controls and advanced navigation guidance software you can use for speed and range and payload. So you're trying to get as much out of the best of both worlds. And I think we're going to continue. Last week we talked about the DX3. And that's a hybrid technology. I think we're going to see more and more of this as people are trying to squeak every ounce of energy and momentum and lifting capacity out of these multi-rotors and fixed wings. And fixed wings are long endurance. So multi-rotors are vertical takeoff and landing. But what's interesting is for every one of these proposals, Max, it's a completely unique looking aircraft. They're all handled very differently. We're not finding some consistency, like they all look like V-22 Ospreys. They're all very different and trying to approach the technology in their own ways.
And the spinning drone part that's in the title of this refers to the fact that on landing, as it's approaching the pole, the motors rotate in opposite directions, which causes the drone, the UAV, to spin. And it's spinning as it then drops down onto this pole. So really different approach.
Oh, come on. You built model rockets. You know you want to cant the fin so it'll spin, so it'll go up straight or down straight.
Yeah, yes.
So, I mean, that's what this is just a stability issue where we're spinning it so it stays stable.
Right, exactly.
This one got you hot and bothered this morning, we needed to talk about it. So I'll defer to you.
We see that Boeing has announced that it plans to acquire Aurora Flight Sciences Corporation. And we have the press release from Boeing. Aurora, of course, specializes in autonomous systems technologies and advanced robotic aircraft. And of course, we've talked about Aurora Flight Sciences many times over the years that we've been doing this podcast. There's a quote from Greg Hyslop. He's the chief technology officer, and he's senior vice president of Boeing Engineering Test and Technology. And he said, "The combined strength and innovation of our teams will advance the development of autonomy for our commercial and military systems. Together, these talented teams will open new markets with transformational technologies." So we've been talking about consolidation. Boeing is doing its part, I think, David.
Well, you gobble to, I mean, it's interesting because Aurora Flight Sciences was always a direct competitor to In-Situ, and now Boeing owns both of them. So it's kind of like Beechcraft owning Cessna. You're consolidating and you're trying to make a better product using the technology of two great companies.
Now, the terms of the acquisition have not been disclosed, so we don't know what the deal is here that brings these two companies together. Boeing says that they expect the customary regulatory approvals to be examined. They say that if this does go through, and they fully expect that it will, that Aurora Flight Sciences will be a subsidiary under Boeing Engineering Test and Technology, and it'll be known as Aurora Flight Sciences, a Boeing company. Boeing also says in their press release that Aurora will retain an independent operating model, of course, at the same time benefiting from Boeing's resources, and we'll see how the integration, you know, sometimes these kinds of acquisitions, it's not clear at the beginning just exactly what the acquiring company is looking to buy. Sometimes it's the technology, sometimes it's the patents, sometimes it's only the people, which are then used in other ways. So I'm sure Boeing has a well thought out sort of master plan here for how they're going to integrate. But it'll take some time for that to happen, I think. And it'll be interesting for us to watch how that does occur.
It'll be interesting if Boeing comes along and makes something like the Phantom Works for drones, you know, makes their own unit for tech. I mean, in this case, Aurora Flight Sciences is going into the technology, which is where Phantom Works was. For anybody who doesn't know Boeing, Phantom Works is the equivalent of Lockheed Martin's Skunk Works. It's their high development, you know. I can see Aurora Sciences following that model where, okay, you guys have your own jurisdictions, your own model on how to do your business and go from there and use it as a technology lever. So I'm looking for, like you, Max, I am looking forward to this acquisition, and it's going to be pretty cool.
Yeah, for sure.
Makes you wonder what's going to happen. We are here in the first week in October. There's not much left of 2017. So interesting what else might get, what transactions might occur before the end of the first of the year.
Well, all right, David, as we mentioned, you recorded a number of interviews at the Big Drone Show in Toronto. And we have a very interesting one that you recorded with someone from DJI.
Yes, Francesco Toro, who's the technical marketing manager for DJI, I recorded this on Thursday, and on Wednesday he had done a formal presentation about the Matrice, which is DJI's venture into commercial drone operations. There's three different versions of the Matrice. It's a very neat piece of kit. Heavy lift, at least two sensors. But we'll go into that. I guess I'll say cue the audio.
All right.
I'm with Francesco Toro from DJI Enterprises. What do you do for DJI?
So I am in charge of all the products. Knowing all the products, work with our production team, marketing team, R&D team, events team, and that's how we keep busy.
So yesterday you debuted a product that's new to the DJI line. What was it we were talking about yesterday?
Yeah, so we launched the M200 series here in Toronto, Canada, and that's for the M200, M210, and the M210 RTK. Models.
And they're not geared towards your normal market, are they?
No, they're not. So this is for the enterprise commercial solutions section. So that's what it's geared for.
So tell me a little bit about the new product.
Okay, so the new drone is it's an IP43 rated drone. So you can put it in some light water if it's raining lightly outside. It also has a dual battery system for redundancy. Another model has a dual payload configuration, so you can mount two different cameras, such as like the XT or the Z30, FLIR camera and a zoom camera. And then the final model, which is the M210 RTK, has the real-time kinetic GPS system. And the advantage of that model is that you can have an accuracy of plus or minus 2 centimeters with our base station, as well as you can fly near high magnetic field places like power lines or near bridges. So,
without any interruption with the signal.
Yes.
Very cool. So what are the lifting capabilities?
For them 200 series, you have a 2 kilogram lifting capability.
And it's, you're talking now not only the hardware, the drone itself, but you're also integrating the other peripherals, correct?
Yes. So we do have other things like you can connect third-party sensors right to our M210 and M210 RTK series. There is a external power port available, XT30 connector. So if you wanted to, you could do that as well.
How different are these from, say, your top-of-the-line prosumer?
Oh, like an Inspire 2?
Yeah.
So it's very different in the sense that you have access to more professional products, right? So you have the Z30, for example, which has 30 times zoom capabilities. And then you have the Zenmuse XT, the FLIR camera, which comes in 30 hertz or 9 hertz or 640 or 330 resolution capabilities. So with the Inspire 2, for example, you cannot mount these cameras. Also, you don't have a dual configuration, right? You can't put two cameras at once, so you can save time by flying one aircraft with those two types of cameras. So you don't have to land, change cameras, and go back up, right? So it's more efficient as well.
Very cool. What's the flight time?
Flight time is rated at up to 38 minutes.
Flight time is 38 minutes. What kind of batteries are you using to operate them?
So the M200 can use a TB50 batteries, which is standard for the Inspire 2. And then the M210 and the M210 RTK use a TB55 batteries, which are much higher watt hours than the TB50s.
Because you're carrying a lot more, power absorbing stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
And how's it fly? Have you flown it?
Yeah, it flies great. It's not meant for speed, obviously. It's not as fast as the Inspire 2, but because of its, it's stable. It's just as stable as any other aircraft that we have. But I think it's smoother. It's much smoother.
Very cool. Well, I appreciate you taking the time. It seems like we talk about your organization every week on the show.
Oh, really?
There's always some news coming out of DJI. We really appreciate it. And thank you for taking the time.
Yeah, no problem.
Well, all right, David, thanks for recording that. That's very interesting conversation with Francisco. DJI is really covering a pretty broad spectrum of the unmanned aircraft market, of the drone market. All the way from really purely consumer drones, all the way up to prosumer and professional and commercial. It's often difficult for one company to cover such breadth of the industry, but DJI seems really capable of pulling this off.
You know, when I was thinking about them entering this market, it's a natural step. They originally started in the consumer market, and then they moved to the prosumer market, and now we're moving to the commercial. It's sort of like they're building their own test program or learning program. Go out and fly on a Phantom, then come on to a pro-level vehicle, and then go to a commercial-level vehicle, all of which are not that different to fly. You have a standardization across all three levels of control. So they're building a market. They're gonna show, I'm not surprised that in the next year or so they're gonna come out with a training program that says, you want to fly our Matrices, here's how you do it. We'll give you a bunch of Phantoms, you learn to fly on those, and that's how you build up the time and the skills need to fly the consumer drones.
Well, and another point that occurs to me is that from a competitive standpoint, DJI certainly has brand awareness. And I think that gives them a lot of marketing power in the industry compared to other companies that may have equally good or even superior products. They are, many of them, largely unknown amongst the customer base for these kinds of commercial and professional applications. But everybody knows DJI, and as they introduce these higher-end models, I think they can benefit from that that brand awareness. It makes it tougher for the other guys to compete, I think.
They've become the Coke of drones.
Yeah, we don't have really a Pepsi at this point, do we?
Well, no, but you don't really order, as a general rule, you don't order a Pepsi. But most people will order a Coke, even though they don't really care whether it's Coke or Pepsi, but they'll order a Coke. So it's interesting. One of the biggest downfalls to a company is complete domination of its industry. I mean, and Coke is a good example of that. Everybody remembers New Coke and what a colossal failure that was, and what an eye-opening experience it was for both Coke and Pepsi. Sooner or later, I think somebody's going to come out to challenge DJI, and I think it'll be in the commercial market. And although it sounds a bit negative, I think nothing better could happen than for those two, for that organization to have some stiff competition or be accused of having a monopoly like Microsoft. You know, the Microsoft crisis, I think, is going to come probably in the next 1 to 2 years. It's got to, because there's not enough domination, and we're going to have to have a reset on who can get into the industry.
Interesting. All right, well, we'll see.
Well, we've got plenty of videos of the week that go with our stories, so check them out at theuavdigest.com/213. But we do have a very large Twitter following base, and it's nice when something like this comes across that we can leverage our Twitter base and leverage our listeners. And that is, this was a tweet direct to us from Mark. And Mark asked, do you know of any comprehensive listing of vertical takeoff fixed wing drones? I'm researching switching from multi-rotor to fixed wing for large crop surveys. Thanks. And I wrote back, I said, Mark, if you don't mind, we'll ask your question on the show today. So first of all, Max had an answer. But second of all, send your lists or maybe your suggestions so we can get them over to Mark to feedback@theuavdigest.com. We're all in this together. So if we can help Mark, it will be worthwhile. And this is the kind of thing is why we want to do the show. So, Max, what did you find?
Well, I just know of one directory that sort of fits with what Mark is trying to research here, and it comes from Unmanned Systems Technology. It's their supplier directory, and we'll put a link to that in the show notes, but the directory there, it lets you look at companies by category. Or you can search for keywords, I guess. But it includes not only UAVs themselves, unmanned systems, but subsystems, components, service suppliers. I think it's intended to be a pretty broad directory of UAV suppliers. But you can go in there, and I did start to play with it a little bit to see if I can find some fixed wing drone makers and some VTOL drone makers, and I got partway through it, but it's really the only thing that I know of. So like David says, if you're aware of some other resources that kind of provide a way to get into a directory and search for companies this way, let us know, and we'll let Mark know.
And we'd love to let you guys know also, because that's the kind of tool that we'd love to be able to share with you. So with that, I guess, Max, should we call this a successful show and call it done?
I think we can call it done. As always, you can find us at theuavdigest.com. As David mentioned, if you want to go straight to the show notes for this episode, you've probably figured out the magic pattern by now, but it's theuavdigest.com/213. We've got links to the news stories we talked about, some other resources associated with each of those topics, as well as a number of videos and other supporting information. So you can learn a lot by visiting our show notes. And of course, we're also on social media, aren't we, David?
We are. And like I've mentioned, we have a large Twitter following at UAV Digest, on Facebook at facebook.com/UAV Digest. You can become a member of our Slack team, and we definitely want to encourage that. You can do that by sending us an email at feedback@theuavdigest.com with your email address, and we'd love for you to join the conversation and network with other people that have the same deep interests in drones as we do. Of course, we'd love for you to leave a review on iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play so other people can find us. That's vitally important. So if you can, take a few minutes and do leave a review. It does help us going forward. And of course, you can purchase some swag at our Cafe Press store or become a patron of the show at patreon.com, all of which you can find again at our website, theuavdigest.com. So with that, I'm going to say this is David in Philly.
And Max in Hartford.
Thanks for listening.